What's up, guys? It's your boy, Nick Hill, and we're back with another episode of Enter the Muse. Today, I got an American artist living in Paris, France, Lala Drana, in the Muse. What's up, Lala?
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here. I love muses, so really excited to have this conversation with you.
Cool. Speaking of muses, what I've kind of find interesting about your art is that it was described that like everything that you create exists in a mythological universe, right?
Yeah. So I first created a universe on a blog. It's called Based on a Fact, basedonafact.com. There I decided that it was after I finished studying creative writing in university. I decided like, okay, well, how am I going to keep this up, keep writing and all that kind of stuff? So I made a challenge for myself. Like every week I needed to write an article. I didn't know what it was going to be about yet, but eventually I started mixing in my real life and then I kind of fictionalized it and eventually it turned into this universe where I was following this character, Lala Drona, so me. And this character, Lala Drona, she's an artist who, she runs a laboratory. And in that art laboratory, she does experiments on muses. And those experiments, they can sometimes be good. They can also be sort of abusive. But what she does is she is extracting inspiration from the muses in order to get inspiration for her real life artwork. So this full fictional universe online with what I call them drones, but it's just assistants in the laboratory and then muses. And there's all these crazy stories that happen with Lala Drona and the paparazzi is like always after her. They're also, there's all these protests against muse abuse and things like that. And so for me, this is sort of just a metaphor for the creative process in my head. And so my real paintings and videos that I create are kind of this, the results of all of that.
Wow, that's like so mind-blowing. It sounds almost like your character is like breaking the fourth wall in a sense. It's like almost meta towards your life and this fantasy world.
I get inspired by anything that is within that transition from the virtual to the real or the synthetic and the physical.
Do you believe that we're in some kind of simulation in real life?
Well, I think, I mean, I'll go back to where this all comes from as well. So when I was 16 years old, I was born with a breast agenesis, a unilateral breast agenesis. And that means that one breast grew fully and the other one didn't grow at all, like didn't develop at all. So when I was 16 years old, I had a medical operation to augment the side that never developed.
Is this something that's common? How many people?
No, it's very rare. I've actually never met anybody else.
Wow.
Who's had this. I've heard of people, but would love to meet somebody if they're out there.
So when the doctor actually gave you the diagnosis, how exactly did he say it? Because it's like so rare. So I'm sure not a lot of doctors would know how to treat symptoms such as that.
So like when you're, when you're 12 years old and your body's developing and we all feel weird and shameful and we don't know what's going on. Apparently all the doctors told me that it's very normal for women to grow one breast and then the second one will like catch up later. And so they were waiting and waiting until finally, even though I knew it was never going to, I just knew it. And they're just waiting. And then finally they're like, yeah, it's never going to grow. And so I was like, oh, okay. and then after that, they're like, you just have to accept yourself the way you are. I'm like, yeah, that's great. But like, it sucks to try to go swimming or it sucks to try to do all of these or meet people and like get to know people and things like that.
What you're saying kind of reminds me of, I was listening to the radio the other day and they were speaking of like, what your insecurity in life and things. And like this one kid was saying that she's too fat and she's young. So at that age, it's kind of like a problem. And you're saying like how people grow and things. Like I remember when I was a kid, like my teeth only fell off when I was like 9. So, and then like the one, it was like only one that fell off and the one grew and my one tooth was bigger than the other. And I'm like, will this catch up? outlet. And there was actually this old Hulk TV series. And then they had like Bo Bixby and Lou Ferrigno as a Hulk. And people were like, the one side's the Hulk and the other side's Bo Bixby.
Oh, no. But it's true. It's true. It's like that waiting. So you know what it's like. It's like, is this going to catch up or not? And I think it's those waiting periods. I don't know. For some reason, they inspire me. And I think having like one breast that was synthetic and one breast that was real, that's when I started thinking about the simulation. Like, okay, I'm simulating what a normal body should look like. I'm simulating what, you know, what I'm supposed to be. And so that's how I started thinking about this change between the natural and the synthetic and the virtual and the real. And I think that we're all simulating something. I do think we live in a simulation. It's just what kind of simulation it could be. I don't know. All of us have our own experiences. And so in one way or another, yeah, society is a simulation. If you think about it, the United States is a simulation of Europe.
Oh, snap. You know? Oh, wow, that, you know, that's something that I never thought of. I never looked at it that way before.
Look up the philosopher Baudrillard. He talks about Disneyland and how you're in Disneyland and you believe this whole universe. But then as soon as you go to the parking lot, you realize, okay, well, it's not real. But at the same time, it reinforces that it was a real world that you were in. And now you're in another real world. And we're like constantly going between these simulations of worlds.
That's kind of like the Truman Show in a way.
Totally.
Yeah. I actually wrote a short story about like how man in the future, like they evolved to like the level of like celestial beings. And at one point, like they were so smart, there was no like walls or anything, and they just got bored. So what these celestials did, there's like five celestials. They took like aspects of themselves and put it in, like they developed like a simulation where like, so people could like relive like their lives or like any lives, they could like choose it like in a simulation almost. Like there's different storylines and things that you'd like go into. And then it's like at a point, it repeats everything again. And like, that's how like time works afterwards. And then like on the outside, there's like this, one of the people, the celestials becomes corrupt and like invents its own simulation. So there's like different simulations run by different people, and in the simulations become like deeper simulations.
That sounds like reality to me, but I don't know. you just wrote like a nonfiction piece.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. No, it sounds like a cool story though. It's definitely, I love all of that dystopian like kind of science fiction kind of stuff. I think about that all the time. Even I think about like deep fakes. You know, and how we're getting to the point.
Did you
of
see
like
the
really
Joe Biden one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, there's this one of the, he's a comedian. He created, it's called like the Fresh Prez of DC. And like, it looks like the technology that they use, it looks like a PlayStation 2 video game, like GTA, San Andreas on PlayStation 2. So just imagine like in 10 years time, what they're going to be able to do with deep fake.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, think about, like, imagine if for one reason or another we were being, okay, that's, I don't want to like make anyone paranoid, but like, what if we were, let's imagine a fictional world, like we were being conquered, or like there was some sort of, you know, we were being conquered by, like, it could be aliens or it could be another country, doesn't matter, whatever, and other. And like, all we see on our phones and on our tablets and all that stuff, devices, is like the regular world and like the just regular news and regular everything. But like, actually, I forgot where I was going with this. I lost it.
Yeah, that happens. Maybe it's the simulators trying to cut you out from like discovering the truth.
It is. Yeah, and putting it on here. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
No, but no, yeah, the simulation and all of that stuff, I think, is super, super interesting. And yeah, I deal with it a lot in my work. And I also I feel like alternate realities. And right now I'm working on The Void. So I'm making all these paintings about The Void, because I guess just recently I just had surgery to remove the implant, because I just don't want anything silicone in my body. Like, so I'm like, finally, after 17 years having that in there, I'm like seeing body and confronting this lack. And so I'm doing all these like I'm creating all of these void paintings, trying to get closer and closer until I can get to like the other side of the void.
So do these paintings like connect in a way? Does it like tell a story, like describe like the void?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess quite literally, it's almost like I have one painting where, because I only painted in gray. So there's one painting where the gray is being pulled away and you see a void underneath whatever that gray was. And then the next painting is just the void, and the next painting is the void even closer. So it's a bigger void until we get so close that you're entering the void.
Wow.
And so now my next paintings are going to be...
And what do you paint these on? Is it like different frame on canvas? Cool. Do you have a picture of this or...
Yeah. I can here. I'm in my workshop, so...
Okay.
This is the gray one with the gray coming off.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then I'll show you really quickly. This is
so that's the first one.
Huh?
So that's the first one, and that's like the last one. Or is it like still getting in? How close are you from the void in this painting?
Well, I haven't finished it, but this is the closest I'm going to get.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah, and then after that, I'll be inside the void. And then we'll still see what's inside there, right?
Maybe the void leads you to like another simulation.
Yeah. Or maybe there's also a void inside the void.
And it's a never-ending void.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it'll be some sort of alternate reality. But yeah, all of those things really interest me. Why do you have an interest in alternate realities and at least they're thorough. Like, they make sure they have a plan B.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They think of everything.
Definitely.
So why did you decide to move from America?
So I think I never felt comfortable completely there. And not that it's a bad thing. I think just in my body, the type of body I had, I was just born uncomfortable. But like, I think I was also...
Because everyone there looks like Kim Kardashian now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I still have really good friends there, and there's good people and stuff. I think I was just, the reason I like to live abroad was because I felt different, like I was supposed to be different, instead of in the United States, it felt like I was supposed to be normal or something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, France literally invented liberty, or not invented, but they like what went like the root of it. When they had the French Revolution and things. So, but how is it like living there?
Well, I like it a lot.
The atmosphere and things.
Oh, well, when I first moved here, I didn't like it at all. It took me like 3 years before I actually.
Can you speak French fluently?
Yes, I can.
Did you know, did you learn it in America? Me? Oh, I can't speak any language except English.
Oh, okay.
And South Africa has 11 official languages. And.
Oh, okay.
I blame the school system.
Yeah. Well, in the United States, they teach Spanish and French, but I don't think it's successful either. You have to really just immerse yourself, or else you can't really learn, I think.
Yeah.
But I do like living here. I think one of the big differences, because I've lived all over. I lived in Chile for a year, in Brazil for a year. I've been all over, but like,
were you studying there or working?
So I studied in Chile and Brazil, and then everywhere else I was doing either I visited family in Venezuela, because half of my family is Venezuelan on my mom's side.
So are you like immersed with the culture over there
in Venezuela?
Yeah.
Oh no, I wouldn't say that. No, I've only visited a few times, but I stayed there for a few months, but no, because
did you get to see the art? Did you get to see the artwork over there and things
in Venezuela?
Yeah,
I saw like some old classical art in Caracas, and it was kind of cool. It was cool when I went, but I haven't been able to go back because things are very, very complicated over there right now. So like politically and everything. Yeah.
And France, how is it like? Because I watched like some Vice documentaries and things. So how accurate is Vice? I'm sure you've seen some of this stuff on YouTube. Yeah, how accurate are the depiction of France?
Well, I'm not sure which videos you watch, but I think all Vice videos, like they still show a truth about like one side of every culture. Of course, maybe it's not like the full, the full view of everything, but I think it's the truth of a certain part. And, but I do think over here, I'll just tell you why I liked it and why I stayed is because I liked I love that they love art and they love culture, and it's very normal to talk about art and about culture and philosophy and things like that. Or just like, even if you don't talk about those things, it's like the types of conversations you have are more like these conversations, I feel like a little bit more, you know, about topics and things like that. And I don't know, I didn't always find that everywhere I've lived, but as far as maybe negative things, I think everywhere has its negative things. Like they have their own history with colonization and things as well, which have really bad results, within the culture. And I feel like they probably haven't completely confronted all of those things yet. And so people are fighting to have a little bit more, visibility on those things, because I think here in France, if I'm not mistaken, last time I looked, it's illegal to do any type of research or collect data on anything that has to do with race or, and I think maybe even gender as well. I'm not sure about that one, but I'm pretty sure. And it's because of World War II. they have this law saying that we're not supposed to discriminate and all this kind of stuff. So what that ends up doing is saying, like, you can't, you know, you can't even study those things almost, or you can't collect data on those things because we don't want another World War II. I think that's the idea of it. I could be wrong, but I think it's a little bit too old now. We have to change that way of thinking.
Yeah. How do you find, like, have you noticed, like, what impact this had on, like, society in France? Because they're not allowed to address such topics about race and things. Has this, like, have you seen the impact that it may have caused, whether it be negative or positive?
Yeah, I think you'll notice the same types of things that you'll notice in other countries. For example, here in France, you don't have to have your picture, like a photo of you on your resume or your CV, but it's really, really recommended and almost everybody does it. And they'll find that people are discriminated against, or they can be discriminated against by their photo and maybe the color of their skin, and definitely by their last name here, because I guess the last name shows, I don't know, if you come from somewhere else originally. And so I think that there's been issues there, but yeah, I don't know what they're doing today though to try to combat it. I think they are doing things in companies though to try to help with that, but really depends on the company.
I think I heard somewhere that they wanted, like, to ban, you know, how a Muslim woman covered their face. They wanted to ban those attire, but now in lockdown, everyone's wearing masks, so they can't really. And they wanted to put a camera so they could identify everyone's face. But now that it's COVID, and do you guys still wear masks in France now?
Yeah, everybody wears masks. And I remember the debate about, you know, women covering their faces and all that. And I don't know. It's hard because I think it is a very complicated thing. And I think I can see both sides at the same time. So it's kind of hard. Yeah, I think there's like a cultural respect that needs to happen. But at the same time, there's this idea of equality of human beings. And I don't know if it's like a forced equality in the way that, you know, France thinks of equality. But yeah, it's a really complicated topic that I don't know if it'll get solved anytime soon or not, but yeah.
The French soccer team, on the national team, there's a lot of people from like African origins. How does the French people react to this? Like, have you found anything? Yeah,
I don't hear a lot of people talk about it besides saying like, yeah, but they're also French, like, it's, you know, everybody's French, you know, but that's how a lot of people here think. It's like, okay, yeah, well, they were born in France, they are French, and we're happy that they're French, and they're like, everyone is, we're all brothers and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, it's maybe I don't know enough to talk about it as well, but I do think it is a complicated topic that is like more nuanced in a different way than the United States and from other places in the world, but it still definitely exists, but in its own way.
How long have you been staying there?
And sometimes in the same way too, but I've been living here for 9 years, but there was 1 year when I lived in China.
Oh, how did you find living in China?
It was a really good experience. I think it really changed my life. I learned a lot. I had a lot of Chinese friends there, learned a lot from them. It also made me very happy.
Can you speak Mandarin?
No. Oh, okay. It made me really happy. It made me really happy to come back though, because I just felt, I guess, we're more free in a different way here. So it was just a relief to come back. And I appreciated a lot of the freedoms that we have.
You're saying that you're not like that free in China or elsewhere. It's like, it's a more free, like, what do you mean by that exactly? Because from the media, what we've gotten is like, it's not very nice, but it's like, you don't notice it. It's not like, it's just how the law is and just like how people living there is accustomed to. So like, to an outsider, it might look like these people, their rights are being violated and stuff, but the people in China, they're just used to it. That's just how life is, because it's always been like that. So how did, like, from a person coming from France, I mean, from America, especially, like, because like America's very like capitalistic and things. So, and like people there, I think it's also like South Africa, like people want, like money is like a big thing, like you need it and things. And then in China, like obey the government and you'd be rewarded. So yeah, what kind of cultural difference did you find there?
Well, I mean, like one thing is that money is very important in China. Yeah. Like it's like,
oh, is
yeah,
it?
It's like a big, yeah, it's like a big, it's a, you give money as a present. Like it's
One of the comedians, yeah. I heard, like, he had a joke about that. Chinese New Year, he was talking about Chinese New Year, and like Chinese New Year is like about money and things. They just like give out money and things.
Yeah, so I think in that way, Americans and Chinese people can understand each other. At least from my point of view, I know every American is different, but I think in general, like if you compare different countries, Americans do like to talk about money. And I think Chinese are very, a little bit more open about it as well. So that was nice compared to being in France. Sometimes that was really hard for me not to talk about money. And now I understand I don't do it. But yeah, it's a very big difference. But in China, I would say like the people there, I love the people there. Like I can't get over it. They, even the fact that there's like some cultural things I think are so beautiful. Even just like not looking somebody in the eye until you really get to know them. Like a lot of times, if you don't know someone very well, they'll keep looking down and keep looking up at you, but they won't keep looking at you unless they know you really well. And it's kind of beautiful.
Oh, it's kind of fascinating. Like, did you explore like the art world over there in China, like their heritage and things?
So some of my favorite artists are from China, but they've moved from China to other countries. So I did see some art, and they have a cool contemporary art scene, but at least when I was there, it was like 2017 or something like that. It's not as, let's say, hardcore, or you're not going to see like naked bodies everywhere. Like those things, it's not as out there because I think the government censored in a way. But I mean, that's when I was there, there's like where maybe somebody will write a letter and they'll keep writing forever, you know, until like the paper is like 100 feet long, or, wow, you know, and there's like lots of conceptual things like that and beautiful, but there isn't any critique of governments or critique of society or pushing. Maybe obviously there are, it's just maybe it's not in the places I was at too.
Yeah, and when you say that they're not allowed that, and it's just like how it is, it's not like anything unnormal for them. So it is kind of interesting, yeah, the way that you see it.
I think some people though, like their parents remember things that the government don't talk about, like Tiananmen Square, their parents remember it. You know, like when the first time it happened with where you could only have like one child, things like that, like really sad things happen to people. And it wasn't like only the government that did things. It was like things would happen, like all of a sudden they'd lose their job if they had another kid and they weren't supposed to, and they couldn't find a job, and like all this kind of stuff that would happen. And yeah, it was almost like everyone together, it wasn't okay anymore to have
that.
I don't know, it was like they wouldn't necessarily, yeah.
Now, I was saying, I heard that what that created was like, now that there's like a way bigger male population compared to female. And like, apparently, I'm probably wrong with the numbers, but apparently like 90 million men won't have wives or something. It could be 9 million. I'm not quite sure. So I don't want to hook it, but it's like something million males are not going to get to have a wife. And that's also going to create like in the future of their amount of population, it's going to go down by a lot.
Yeah, it's really complicated. I think they just changed the laws a little bit to make it a little bit more lenient. But also China, what's also very, what I admire about the culture as well is it's like the oldest empire, and they think about everything really long term. So they don't really care if a bunch of people if the population isn't going to be at like its optimal balance and stuff at this moment, because they know that the next generation and the next generation is going to all balance out. So it's kind of like a wise way of looking at things as
It sounds kind of like Thanos from Avengers, like he has like a long-term plan to balance it out.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't know, but probably I like that you thought about Thanos though.
Yeah, they were saying like there's something like called predictive programming where they like put that out there and then like it happens in the future and things, but who knows, it's simulation.
Yeah, or you know, because it's like does art imitate life or does life imitate art? And it's like, yeah,
one of the UFC fighters, Israel Adesanya, he's a big anime fan and he likes Naruto, and in one of his fights, like he pulls as one of the characters, and then apparently like some episode, I'm not a fan of it, I don't watch it, but apparently like some episode the character did that, and he like basically recreated the same scene just in the ring in a fight, and he was like, that's kind of like art imitating reality, or reality imitating art.
Yeah that's awesome.
So for your upcoming projects, what are you working on? Are you still working on The Void, or what else are you doing?
Oh, so for my next project, like for my paintings, I'm working on The Void.
So do you make stuff for customers? Like, do people come to you? Or who's your like market that you paint for?
So I have collectors who will contact me online, on Instagram, if somebody wants a painting, or I also show in exhibitions and galleries or in different spaces, and I'll share my work when I do that. And yeah, so that's pretty much it. And then, as far as projects I'm working on right now I'm painting the Void. And then I'm also creating a documentary with another filmmaker right now on my experience with all the surgeries and everything, and the my art and how the surgeries have influenced my art. And that should be out probably in 2022 or 23. It's in a while, but because I have to have one more surgery, and then I'll be completely done with this, and that'll be cool. But so that's going to be called La Ladrona Agenesis, so look for that. And then besides that, I'm also inspired by my fictional universe. I'm creating a fiction podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that takes place in the Lala world, and in the laboratory and all that. So that is also going to take a while to finish, because I want to finish everything. And then after that, I want to launch it after I'm finished.
Cool. So you're going to write it and then read it out like an audiobook almost on your podcast.
Yeah. So it's kind of like an audiobook, but it's more like theater. So it's, I don't know if you know the podcast Girl in Space, but it's
do they actors or voice actors to come in like narrate, and it's almost like they have like sound effects and things like that? Is it similar to this?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like it's really happening, like somebody's recording their voice and you're hearing this transmission or something like that.
That's like the old school like radio in like the 1950s. They used to have like those like stories, and they had like those famous Orson Welles to like narrate it and things.
Oh yeah, then like World of the Worlds and stuff like that. People thought it was real.
Yeah. Imagine that. Maybe it was real, and they're like
oh, I know, and we're just living in a simulation.
Yeah, and they just like told you, no, that's not what happened. It was just a hoax.
Exactly. You know how they remake a lot of movies, like thinking of The Matrix, how would you feel if they remade The Matrix?
Apparently they're doing a sequel to it, Matrix 4.
Okay.
Yeah, but a remake, I don't know, like if it's a reboot, it could work, but like it has to be the Wachowskis, because they, it's their story, it's their, but like if they had to reboot their own franchise, I think it would work, because it's like a continuity. Or then again, it's like someone else controlling the Matrix, and it's like someone, another narrator's interpretation of it. But I don't know, like it could work, but like there's some movies that they shouldn't remake, like Scarface, like the 1980 something version of it. That was actually a remake or like, yeah, like a remake of a, like a 1920s version. But that one was like, that's just like a standalone movie that you can't touch again. Like the people who made that made it into their own like creation. But like stuff like that and The Godfather and things, like you can't remake that, but The Matrix could be interesting.
Yeah, well, how would you feel if they remade it and then they changed the demographic for like tweens?
And it just becomes like Twilight.
They make it, they try, yeah, it's like Twilight Matrix.
Yeah, like Twilight's like just a soft version of Blade.
Is it?
Nah.
I love Blade.
Yeah.
I was like, Blade is not, Blade was like my favorite movie when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah.
But, what do you think of the sequels?
Oh yeah, I love Blade. I'm not a huge fan of them. I like the original the best, and I really, it's just, I love that opening scene. I love the music. I love, like, everything was so cool when they're in that club and they like just put up their arms, you know, with like the Blood is Rising song. And then, yeah. And
would you one of the people who would like go to like that kind of parties like during the Blade time?
Yeah, like I think I was a little too young during Blade time, but that's also what made it so cool, was like, oh, I want to go to something like that when I'm older. But no, it's but when I was older, yeah, I went to crazier parties, and I was like I was a punk rocker when I was when I was like 16, you know.
Well, what's your favorite bands from like the 2000s?
Oh, from the 2000s? I don't know. I have to look at dates. I'm not very good at dates. You mean like when...
Like
when
punk rock bands.
Oh, well, I listened to a lot, but I don't know. It's hard to say now, but like, let me think. I know people made fun of me back in the day for this, but like I liked the Distillers. It was because I really liked the woman's voice. There was other bands I can't remember them right now, but I mean, of course I loved, you know, like I liked the Casualties, but like not that much. And there were like other bands that weren't necessarily punk, but I really liked them, like the Vandals.
You look like you're a fan of Blink One, what's it, Blink 180? I'm stuck with numbers, but you're not.
No, I did not like Blink 182.
Blink 182. I was like, what if I get it wrong and like sound like an idiot?
No, Blink 182 is more of like a pop band, I think.
Maybe.
Like, all the small things.
Yeah.
But no, I wasn't that into that. But no, I liked a lot of those bands that, you know, it's funny because, you know, when you're a punk rocker, when I was a punk rocker, it was in the 2000s. So it was really just a simulation of what a real punk rocker is. It's not even a real punk rocker because it's linked to a time in history. Like it's linked to London at a certain moment in history, and then it moved to the US. And then now it's like, there's, I don't know, punk is,
like,
I guess, but punk is an attitude. Yeah,
like 70-year-olds would like still want to be cool.
Yeah, but I think it, more than anything, punk was just like an attitude, and like it was just this attitude of being like dirty, not caring, and like being rebellious, and just being like, screw everything, I'm gonna stay up late and I don't know, drink or do drugs, unless like you're somebody who doesn't do those things, and you could be straight edge, and just a big, I liked it a lot because it was so accepting of everybody. And then at the same time, like, I also really liked the fashion as far as like being able to cover myself, because I didn't want anyone to see my breasts too, because they were weird. And so it was also like really practical, because I was like, oh, cool, I can like cover my body and nobody notices. They just think I'm being fashionable.
I actually saw like a picture of the Rolling Stones, like now they're like, they're reunited, and like Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, they're like all dressed like rock stars. And there's this one guy, I think he's a drummer, he's dressed like an actual old man. He's like the only one who's like, looks normal.
That's really funny. Yeah, I still think it's cool when older people can still like rock out and everything.
Like Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, it's wild. But I also would still appreciate it if they just went out there and did something like slow and acoustic. I'd be like, that's actually pretty badass too.
I think Ozzy Osbourne looks like he would actually do that, like just once.
Yeah.
Just like show up once randomly at like a random concert, and then you just like do that and then walk away.
Definitely. Yeah, man, the 2000s were wild though. I really liked them, I guess. But I guess it was actually, I didn't like them at the same time. But yeah,
looking back, you do.
Yeah, looking back, I'm like, wow, that was pretty wild life. Like,
yeah,
we used to do really bad stuff. Like, even, I remember my friends would get like a car and they would drive around the neighborhood and look for open garages. And then in order to like steal the alcohol for a party, and then like,
oh, yeah,
it's like pretty criminal actually. But I'm just thinking about it now, like, wow, that was pretty bad. Oh, and we also did these crazy things. Like there was I just remember, cause the kids are crazy, I guess, but like, we put like a friend in the trunk of the car, and then we would, in the middle, we would make sure we were in traffic. And then we'd stop the car, and then our friend would open up the trunk, and like he would be like taped up and tied up like he was getting kidnapped. And then like, so the people behind us would see, and then our friend would come out, and he had like a big mohawk. He'd come out of the car and then like yell at the guy and slam the trunk and be like shut up and get back in the car, and we'd drive away.
Did anyone call the cops?
Well, I don't know, because no one ever came to us, but yeah, we were just really...
You're lucky you're in traffic. Oh, the cops would have gotten you guys.
Yeah, I think especially today, I don't know, cops were intense back then too, but I think today things are even more like, I don't know, they don't take jokes at all.
I think wrestling, like WWE in the 90s had a part to play, like in like the people growing up in that time period, because like WWE was like the most popular, wrestling actually was the most like popular form of entertainment back then. And both WWE and WCW were like in a war. So they're doing like stuff on different networks. So they're doing like stuff to get their ratings higher and higher. And by doing so, they like do like crazy ass shit. And they're like, they got a big following of that. And it's like people like in the teens and things, they'd like get inspired by that, and then actually, and like now it's like, it's what you see on TV is like more laid back, and there's like so much stuff on television now that you can't really, and that's how you get like the niche people who are into certain stuff, because there's like so much out there now. So I guess in that way, with lockdown and things, you are like away from people and like with yourself most of the time, so you can explore like your own characters, like what you like in like what your preferences, because back then, like when you're more like in a social world, like you'd be like influenced by your friends and things, so like your view on the world would be like, because I heard like somewhere they said that your personality trait is the personality of like your five best friends, so it'd be much more like close-minded or like not close, yeah, like the stuff that you exposed to is like mostly from the same people and things. And like now, like lockdown has created a lot of problems and things, but I think also now, like people can like explore what they into.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I totally agree with that. And I think even just thinking about like podcasts, I feel like they become, especially your favorite podcasts, things like that, they become your best friends, and they become these people that, I don't know, that you spend time with every week. And so in one way or another, they have an influence on your personality. Just like, you know, back in the day before smartphones and everything, where we would just hang out with somebody every day at school. Yeah. Or, I mean, people still hang out with people at school every day, but you know what I mean? So I think we've expanded for sure.
Some people have to hang out with other people in school through Zoom and things. Like they're actually doing like over here in South Africa, they're doing like Zoom classes and things.
Wow. Yeah, that's rough. I remember here when they were doing, like when we could only see people on Zoom, and we literally couldn't even go out without a paper that, like, we had to have like a kind of a permit.
Really?
Saying that we could leave our house. Yeah.
What's your opinion on the vaccinations?
Oh, the vaccinations. I guess I understand both sides for sure. I just take it from the point of view, at least me personally, I want to make, if I can save a few people by getting vaccinated and in like this big wide context, I'm happy to do it. I do understand though that people are afraid and like who knows what this vaccine, you know, can cause in the future and all that stuff. I just also think of like we're in a very like unprecedented time in history. And if you think about it, in other times in history when we've been at war, like you kind of, it sucks, but you kind of lose your rights a little bit. Like you can't go outside, you can't do all these things anymore. So, you know, there's part of me that thinks like, if you want to live in society and have all the benefits of it, unless maybe your society isn't giving you those benefits anymore, but that's where the problem comes too. But yeah, I do think that it would be, for me, I'm more scared of the variants and how fast they're changing, and I'm more afraid of that than I am of the possible effects of the vaccine, I guess.
How has COVID been there? Have you gotten COVID yet? You have?
No, yet. Yeah. Well, everyone says that. No, I haven't. But everybody says eventually we're all going to have it sometime.
Because I had it at some point.
I haven't had it. Yeah, how was it for you?
It wasn't actually that bad. Like it was like the flu. Like I had the flu, which was like way worse. But I was taking this thing called quercetin and my vitamins and things. So my immune system at the time was like really strong. But other people have gotten it and they like died and things from it. So
yeah.
But I spoke to my doctor and she was saying that, because I was asking like how reliable is this, because the way I looked at it was that there's like been cancer for how many years, HIV and AIDS and things, as there's no cure for that. Now in 1 year they created a cure or a vaccine for COVID. So I was asking my doctor about that. And she is saying that you should look at it, like you said, as a war, because it's killing people and things. And the vaccine's the only thing there, the only weapon that you have to fight it and combat it. So, and then she's told me that because I had it, I don't need to get a vaccine at the moment because I have antibodies for at least 8 months. And what the vaccine does is kind of create antibodies, but the reason you have to get it so quickly or like after a few months and things, you can't just take one and then you like fine. You have to take it every year because of the different variants and things and because the antibodies wear off out of your body.
Yeah, it's really complicated. And I think now it's actually, I think it's also kind of a good sign that we're all so worried and we're all also like researching a lot on our own. Like, I feel like that says a lot about society and individuals in general, is that we want to know, we want to research, we want information, I think is a really good sign. But it's just, it can be scary if there's like you know, misinformation and another simulation. But you know, but I guess we all just have to try. But yeah, I think I did get the vaccine, so I mean I know I'll have to get a booster shot eventually, but yeah, I guess it's one of those things, like if something happens in the future, it happens, and oh well, like I guess that was my story. Oh well.
Yeah,
I've lived a pretty great life until then, so.
Apparently, yeah. The CEO of Pfizer did not take it, and he was going to travel on a plane, and then they stopped him because he didn't take the vaccine. And his excuse for it was, I just found like, it was like the dumbest excuse. He's like, he didn't want to like hold people up in line, but he's a CEO. Can't they just like bring it to him in his office and there's no queue or anything? He can just take it. And then, but now the FDA has approved of it. So.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I think it's great if the FDA approves it, but I feel like it shouldn't matter. Like you should just take it or not take it, whatever, in the end. But like, I feel like, I hate to talk badly about the FDA, but they approve a lot of things that shouldn't be like approved. I feel like there's so many horrible things that happen with breast implants. It's toxic to the body, and it can, it makes a lot of people
isn't
sick.
That like, how Kanye West's mother passed away?
I don't know.
I think so. I might be wrong. I should fact check it. But and he just released that album Donda. I don't know if you into hip hop, but he was like taking it like, so he like wanted to release it like for a while, but he was like teasing it, and he had like a release party. So I was in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and like he was like living in the stadium to like finish that album. And he ended up not releasing it on that date, but he like sold like his merchandise in fashion and things. Like he like made over like $1 million in one night and things. But now like 2 days ago, he just released Donda. I think Universal released it first without his permission. And cause he's like fighting Universal, like over rights and things. And then he's like, he's the new Moses, and he's gonna save the music industry. But so they released it, and then like he made that public, he actually like put it out there, and then he released his one like just a few hours later, and he like creates different kind of versions of his songs. So I think on some platform, on YouTube, he released like both of them, part one and part two, but on like some platforms, if you like press the special button, it just like converts to the second part. So like the stuff he's doing in art is like genius. And like the stuff, the sound production is like so clear and things. And I don't think people are gonna appreciate it until like 10 years time. And that's like all his music's like at the time you don't appreciate it. And then you look back, cause he did like an interview to 2009. And like at the time people hated it. Now when people look at it, they're like, they love it. Maybe that's like that nostalgia thing, that memory thing. Like you look back and you like, this thing was actually like innovative for the time.
Yeah, I was reading a book about looking at that actually. I forgot the part, but they talked about how the reason artists feel like, a lot of times they feel like their new work isn't good, or like, they used to be better. Like, I don't like their new stuff, whatever. It's because as time passes, like people have more time to understand the old stuff. So people can understand it. They've been studying it. It makes sense because we're able to look back. A lot of times when new and innovative things come out, people are just not into it. And then eventually I think, there's something that happens where, it could be nostalgia or what you connect it with or what we know now. And then so you're like, wow, that was actually really good for that time period. And like, he was visionary.
That's quite fascinating, because I'm sure that happens a lot in art, like most of the in paintings and things. Like most of the painters, they create stuff, and then like at the time, like they died broke and things. And then 2 centuries later, people buy it for like 3 million and things. How much interest do you find like your customers paying attention to like the background of your paintings and your artwork and things? Or are they more like concerned on like how it looks and things?
So I feel like there's two sets. There's people who just look at the aesthetics of it. But I guess me personally, I really like it when people want to know more and not just like, I mean, it is important to see the aesthetics, because if it touches you, that's what's really important. At the beginning, it's that first attraction. And I do have a lot of people who care about the background, and because I think that sometimes it doesn't make sense to a lot of people until they hear the story behind it, or they hear my personal story, or they hear the story behind the painting itself and the story that it has and the concepts behind it. And I think that that's sometimes where the magic is too, because sometimes you can see something and you don't like it, and then you hear the story and you still don't like it. But sometimes you can see something and not understand it, and then you hear the story, or you even just hear the title, and then it's like, whoa, that just blew my mind. I totally see it now. That's exactly what that is. And I feel it too. And I think those are the best moments. And those are more the people I'm at least the most interested to engage with, is people who really try to give themselves to a painting or an art piece.
So your Lala Drona character in the in your stories and things, does she experience like something that drove her to create the artwork and things? And like on your podcast, will you be like discussing like how that painting, like would you do like an episode like focus on, let's say, The Void, and you like the story of how Lala Drona came up with The Void?
So in, at least in this season, Lala Drone is more of this elusive figure that nobody ever sees. We just hear about her, and like it's sort of dystopian in that way. It's a laboratory, and
so you're sort of like from other people almost.
Yeah, so it's Lala Drona. It's her, their leader, and they're so, it's almost like their leader, and they all follow her, and it's all like, let's follow what she says, and you know, and everything. But no one ever sees her, so it's like, is she real? Is she not? I don't know. So every episode is about an art piece that she's made. And so how, and then what happened, like what muse experiment or what happened in the laboratory to make that art piece. So, and then, yeah, the narrator talks about every art piece, and there's like video art. There's also, sculptures. There's one, painting. Yeah.
So how long are each episodes? And like in season one, how many episodes will they be?
So there's going to be 8 episodes, and they're about 30 minutes long. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. It was great having you on the show. Our topics that we explored was like quite fascinating, and you look at things in ways that you haven't actually thought of before, and things, the way that like conversations take you into like, makes you explore stuff in like your own mind that you never thought of before. But like when you actually like putting it out there, you actually realize, oh, that's what, how I'm thinking. And that's what like podcasts are about. And I think from this episode, we got like really into the way your mind works with creating art and things. And it's like, your story is like quite crazy. It's incredible, like with the way that how everything ties in. Thanks for coming on the show. I really enjoyed having you on. And so where are you going to like distribute your documentary when it comes out?
I'm not sure yet. It's like way too early for all that, but I'll definitely put updates on my Instagram. So my Instagram is at DronaLala, DronaLala. And then on my website, which is www.laladrona.com. So I'll keep updating there and everything. And I'll keep you updated as well. And yeah, thank you. I really had a great time. I had a blast. This conversation went all over the place, but in all to all the best places. So that was a really great experience. Thank you for inviting me.
Anytime.